Thank you very much for that. So now's the opportunity to broaden the discussion. I see some hands going up already. When you make your contribution, you can say who you are and what you do if you like, but you don't have to, because this is Sheffield, not America. I believe. Until someone tells me different. So, first of all, the gentleman over there, and then the two gentlemen here, and then I'll move back as well.
My name's Trevor from Whitefield.
Just hold on to the mic, just in case.
My name's Trevor from Whitefield. Does the government not understand that Richard's not a terrorist? Back in 1986, before the current extradition law, I was prosecuted by Columbia Pictures and Warner Brothers in America. For a very similar crime, but there was no internet then, so videotapes. I got a £200 fine and was bound over for 2 years. I'm still in this country, but I was prosecuted in this country for a crime in this country, but prosecuted by American companies. Since then, because of the 9/11 and the terrible things that happened then, they seem to be using this law to just extradite anybody. How many terrorists have actually been extradited from the UK to America under this current law that we have? Or suspected terrorists, I should say.
I don't think we've got a definitive answer, but it's not more than one or two, as far as we can tell.
One or two.
I think it's
three
one.
Three cases with Chris Tapping, Gary McKinnon and Richard O'Dwyer. They're not terrorists. It's a joke. Because the government now understand, you might get help.
I think that may be a rhetorical... Shall we leave that as a rhetorical question,
yeah,
hanging in the air for a minute, and then pass the mic over to these gentlemen over here? Perhaps you'd go and then pass it along?
I'm an author of computer books for several international publishers. I'm also a news editor on ghacks.net, which is a technology and internet website with hundreds of thousands of regular readers. Many of whom are based in America, and some of whom are very similar to Richard. And I have two very quick questions, open questions for the panel, if I may. It's widely known that young people often are not aware of the potential consequences to their future of what they put online. And do you believe that schools, colleges and universities should perhaps take a larger role in education and safeguarding for young people? And also, are governments now becoming too close to big business when it comes to protecting intellectual property? And as a result, are our own governments failing the public in their role as impartial adjudicators and lawmakers?
Thank you very much. We'll put that to the panel in a moment. The gentleman next to you, if you wouldn't mind.
Hello, my name is Martin, I'm a software developer. Extradition is supposed to be the process which prevents people from hiding in a foreign jurisdiction. It seems in this case that we actually have the reverse of extradition. We have a gentleman who may or may not have committed a crime under UK law that's not been attested. He was operating from a bedroom in Sheffield. The server, I understand, was located in Sweden.
Sure.
So the United States appears to be using an extradition law to force the extradition of somebody who's none of their concern whatsoever. And it appears to be, as the chap here was saying, in commercial interest.
Thank you. Do we want to perhaps take one more contribution before we go to the panel for some reflections? Gentlemen up here, we'll gradually work our way up. Don't worry, and then we can. Yeah, this guy here in a Newcastle T-shirt, Newcastle United T-shirt. Forgive me.
I'm Chris. In first year, I'm a similar course to Richard. In the room, Dorian, I'm Chris. I'm extradited from the Southern Soviet confinement, and then for a judge who refused the deal because he was the danger of the public. He was a 60-plus-year-old man who sold batteries.
Thank you. Right, I'm going to come back to anyone on the panel who wants to make a contribution. Bella, do you want to go first on any of the kind of legal principle points or anything?
Yes, those are a really interesting set of questions, and obviously this issue touches on so many other issues. On the point about the way in which this law was really a response to the events of 9/11, and yet we see all these people nothing to do with terrorist allegations being shipped off. One thing I would say is that at Liberty we wouldn't be happy with reforms that introduce safeguards like this for most offences, but said, oh, you know, because terrorism is different, there should be no safeguards and none of these principles should apply there. Because anyone can be wrongly accused of something. And the US has got form for coming quite aggressively after individuals in this country, supposedly for terror offences, where there isn't actually any evidence. Immediately after 9/11, a man called Lofty Raisi was arrested here in the UK. The US was seeking his extradition. He was banged up for 5 months in a maximum security prison. But because we didn't have our rotten extradition law on the statute, but then, because the US were forced to make a prima facie case to get his extradition, he was never extradited because these safeguards were in place. Of course, since then, he's been completely exonerated. So one sort of word of warning, I guess, is that these safeguards have to be introduced for everybody across the board, no matter what it is you're alleged to have done by an aggressive US prosecutor.
Absolutely, and of course, why not? Not sure we're still awake and alive and we still have some fight left in us. And abusing the chair, because I'm not supposed to be speaking, of course. But in answer to Chris with the Newcastle United T-shirt, and who's studying, like Richard, he expresses understandable concern at Christopher Tappin, the 65-year-old man who's now in solitary confinement. Through the eyes of an El Paso jury, he's looking quite a lot like Abu Qatada. Why? Because they say he's been arming Iran. That's what they say. That's the accusation. Right? He says, I do import export. I provide freight for people, and I don't know, you know, what they're going to do with it. These are industrial batteries of some kind. I'm not an expert. I was providing the freight. They say, no, you're selling missile parts to Iran. So you see how an individual, a human being, can look very, very different in his own country, in another country, through the eyes of his own community and his own government, perhaps, and through the eyes of other people, which is why we think human rights are for human beings. Regardless of your passport, you need this basic protection. And that's why we're not just saying that these protections should be for British nationals. They should be for all people. They're good enough for Americans in the United States. They're good enough for everybody here in the UK, too. Julia, I wondered if you wanted to say anything in response to what you've heard.
I lost it, really.
And we'll come back to
me with another question.
What about from our learned colleagues from the university?
There was just one thing. You said there's no test case, and I think the insinuation is that Richard's been made an example of, really, isn't he, in this situation. But actually there was a test case. As some of you might be familiar with, TV Links, whose site is still actually accessible, Google TV Links. But they...
You're not advertising it, are you?
I'm not advertising it at all, but I would say go home and look up the case of TV Links in 2009 and see what happened with their case when they were tried in the UK for very similar things, and it was a very similar case to Richard's.
Okay, I think perhaps we'll take... Yeah, we'll go... Well, my colleagues need a bit of exercise, so we're going to send them right up to the top now to do some points and contributions from the top of the top of the hall. We will come to you, sir, don't worry. So can we start in the corner with the gentleman who's holding his piece of paper up high?
Thank you, Shannon. Good evening to the panel, including yourself and Julia. My name's Simon Walker. I'm President of International Students for Social Equality. I'm a student here at Sheffield Hallam. My question to the panel is this: why hasn't the NUS or any student body outside of our own taken up the struggle on behalf of Richard O'Dwyer?
And the lady just below.
Julia, it's a question to Julia. As you know, I'm from the World Socialist website, which is a global readership. Is there anything you would want to say to American workers on this case?
Okay, and gentlemen over here, I'm just trying to get a few people in before we go back to the panel so that everybody gets a chance to have their say.
All right. Loz Kay, leader of Pirate Party UK, and I'm actually happy to come from a party that has never caved on issues to do with civil liberties and to do with terrorism, alleged terrorism. I'm afraid that this case that we're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg. that with particularly the ACTA Treaty that was mentioned here, we're seeing the possibility of people being criminalised even for alleged aiding and abetting of copyright infringement. This is truly chilling. This is truly draconian. This is essentially the way towards a whole raft of Richard O'Dwyer cases. And this has been in the name of defending artists. I'm sorry, it's not going to put any more money in artists' pockets. But it will cause difficulties for civil liberties. That's why I'm really pleased that liberty, or this is an issue to do with civil liberties. It's an issue to do with human rights. So the question is, what now? What is the effective action? What is this? Is, for me, this is essentially, it's a political issue. And it's very good to put, sort of, I think, bringing in that aspect. What, for the panel, what is the concrete action that we can take now?
Thank you very much. By the way, don't feel you have to turn a contribution into a question. it's fine to make make a nice pithy contribution. You don't have to put a question mark next to it or raise your voice like an Australian at the end. It's fine to make a pithy contribution to the gentleman here. He's patiently waited.
Okay, thank you very much. I do have an Australian accent, although I was born in Yorkshire.
That was good luck on my part, wasn't it?
my family emigrated out there when I was a youngster, but I was one of the very last people extradited under the 1989 Act. And I'd like to tell you why the prima facie case business is absolutely no good. Right. But first of all, I'm here tonight because the state of people that are being extradited. I just want to say, Mrs. Agarwal, we feel your pain. My wife and I feel your pain. We've been paying off the debts of being extradited for the last 7 years. We're now saving more legal costs. We expect that it'll be a 15 to 20 year fight to get justice. I can honestly say that we have been financially, socially, and emotionally raped by the extradition system in this country. Now, I'd like to tell you what I see as the real issues. Firstly, when I was extradited, nobody would listen to anything. The government was plainly not interested. I might add that at that time, David Blunkett was the Home Secretary. Now, the extradition request had 13 charges. The courts allowed 12. When I was landed, after being extradited, I was hit with 39 charges. When I said, that's a breach of the extradition treaty, I was told, don't expect the British government to know anything about it. And so, my wife called the Home Office. The exact words that she received were, we cannot interfere in another country's legal system. The Home Office turned a blind eye. We suffered many human rights abuses. The case that was made against us fell apart 6 months after that in court. In less than half an hour, it was so insubstantial.
And if you don't mind me interrupting, sir, had you been detained during this time?
Absolutely. I'd spent 2.5 years in various forms of detention. I even spent 3 hours in jail in Bangkok while the police who were extraditing me went duty free shopping.
Thank you.
Now, when I got back and I spoke to my lawyers, they said there's no recourse. Best you can expect is to take this to a human rights court where the Home Office will defend itself by saying we acted within the law. And the best you can expect is to get a declaration of incompatibility, which is useless. I lost my business, I lost my job, I lost my career. I lost my dignity. I lost my faith in British justice completely, and no faith in British justice. I lost my faith in the government, and personally, I don't think the courts have a lot of credibility. I hear the courts time after time saying, we have to presume that the extradition requests are made in good faith. To me, that's a statement born out of ignorance that invites human rights abuse. The real problem, I'll just finish up by saying, is to me, from what I've seen, from what I've experienced, the Home Office turns a blind eye. They know the crimes are going on, they know that there is judicial abuse of the system, they know that there are human rights abuse, but they turn a blind eye. This is corruption. And I think they have enough paperwork to support those claims. I'd like to work with Liberty, if Liberty is interested, to put that paperwork forward, because there's just too much of it going on.
Thank you very much, sir, and we'd certainly love to hear from you in more detail after this meeting, but thank you. It must have taken a lot to put yourself through that in front of all of you. I think it's quite sobering to hear someone's experience even under the old arrangements where there was some requirement for, as the gentleman said, for a prima facie case. So imagine the greater risk now. And I think, if I may say so, it's a great reminder that we are human beings and not robots. As Julia said, no one says that people should escape justice just because they're in one country rather than another. Instant extradition would be fine if we were all robots. It wouldn't matter that we were passed from one part of the world to another and sat there in a holding pen or in a prison cell for 2.5 years with our lives on pause, because we'd be robots, not human beings. But for a human being who is presumed innocent and may perhaps be vindicated in the court years later, they've already lost so much of their life. So extradition can be a punishment in itself. That's the point, I'm afraid, that the drafters of this treaty and the legislators didn't grip. They forgot that human element that you've heard put so eloquently tonight. Now, do the panellists want to briefly reflect on what they've heard and the questions, contributions, whatever?
Yeah. Well, the first question was, you know, does the government understand this legislation? That's what happens, as David Davis pointed out, and lots of people have, when you have rushed legislation. You know, it's a complete mess. Privately, a lot of people in Parliament accept that. I get the impression that it's a question of winning over the argument to do it. Because I was involved in a case where it was when Gordon Brown came out as Prime Minister and said it was the greatest threat to security, and the cop who'd sort of been photographed of these names. The lads there were students. We led the campaign, and every single student, which ended up in the SIAC courts, was exonerated or went back. Yeah, and their lives are completely and totally turned upside down. And as the last story tells, that's why it's really important to get this right in principle. And it's, you know, whoever the person is, it's a human being. They're innocent until there's, you know, a vindication in court. And these were SIAC courts, which is, I was shocked to find out that they exist in this country. Secondly, a lot of people have asked about issues to do with ACTA, SOPA and stuff like this, jurisdiction. It really is a complete mess, and it needs figuring out in some serious way, because as someone said, I thought the server was in Netherlands, whether at one point it was in Sweden. Where is the crime being committed? It isn't straightforward by any means, and it's important that you know, if there is a crime, where is it? Why the US is doing it is very simple. Somebody said it earlier. It's to do with big corporations that are sort of leaning on US. And there's a big issue about the internet. The internet was created by computer scientists who gave their time freely to create something that was freely available to people. Yeah? And what's happened is these acts are trying to draw a complete net round it. I don't want to get anything about technical, but it's a serious issue. What is a very, very, you know, available thing for everybody could become highly centralised and controlled by the US, and that is not at all, it's a very scary thing.
Thanks for that. Does anybody else on the panel want to?
I'm aware that no one answered the question from the students about what the students are doing, and obviously I don't get to know what the students are doing because I'm not cool enough to go in the
UN. specifically, not students. Yes. I mean, students have turned out in support for Richard.
Yeah, there are a few students here tonight, actually. Yes. So, but I think there's a wider issue, and as Loss asked, what is the next step? What are we going to do? And I'm sure there's a thought that a lot of young people now won't get off their arses and do anything, will they? But we do need more awareness in the young community, in the student community. I don't think there's enough debate happens within the union, and I don't think there's enough discussion and encouragement to get them to talk about these issues. So a lot of students aren't aware of it. I know one of my colleagues went and spoke in lecture to a group of computing students only a few days ago, and half of them weren't aware of Richard Orr's case, and those are students at this university. So I can't speak on behalf of the students, but I would suggest that you write to the chair of the NUS and ask for their opinion on it. Perhaps they're of a similar opinion to the university, that they don't want to get involved in any legal case.
Over many weeks of Richard's arrest, and they're not.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. I mean, we'll certainly at Liberty take this up with the NUS nationally. We have worked with them on other issues, not least protest, which has become increasingly important to students. So we will take it up with the NUS nationally. And of course, I'm reminded that the gentleman at the front made the point about whether schools and universities are doing enough to educate young people about the law, and not just the law of computers and the internet, but perhaps the law generally, and about their rights and freedoms generally too. I would argue, because it is a jungle out there. I mean, you're a computing lecturer, but you need to know so much law.
Exactly. There's a lot more laws around it.
And it's also general stuff, such as not putting up drunken photos of yourself on Facebook when you're applying for jobs.
No, exactly.
It's the whole internet. You know, your personal privacy. And your respect for
absolutely,
and
the way that you conduct yourself.
Absolutely, I think from an extradition watch point of view, because clearly there are all sorts of issues about how the law of the internet should be, and whether copyright should be reformed, and in which direction. But from an extradition watch point of view, safeguards are so much more important, not less important, when you've got the possibility of governments, the United States government or other governments, asserting jurisdiction over the entire world, the World Wide Web. And that's the point, isn't it? That you don't need to leave the country anymore, you don't need to leave your desk anymore to be a wanted person in jurisdictions all over the world. And that's why we need more protection from instant extradition, not a loosening of the protections as has happened. We need more discretion back into the system. That's what I'm afraid. I'm not going to go do comebacks from people who've spoken, because there are more people to speak, and there's only about 15 minutes left. So pithy contributions, we'll take a great big round of them, and then we'll go back to the panel for the last time. Gentleman in the white shirt, lady with long blonde hair behind him.
Thank you. Just on the question of doing something, can't we just have a mass campaign to circulate these links so that millions of people are involved in the game?
That's the I am Spartacus. That's the I am Spartacus defence. Okay. Right, and the lady behind him, please.
I'm actually a colleague of David and Jessica, so I'm a lecturer here at Hallett. There is an issue with the law. At the moment, we do teach the students copyright law, we do teach them about Computer Misuse Act, Data Protection Act. It's part of the things that we do here. Our problem is, when all these laws are being introduced, how do we know that that's now impacting us?
Exactly.
I don't think any of us could have foreseen that creating a website was suddenly going to get a student of 10 years in the US. And the question I wanted to ask actually was, Mr. Davis, If we manage to put all this pressure on the politicians, do you actually think that they're going to have the guts to stand up against the US and change the treaty and change the media? You
know? I think that's a good question. We go right to the back. There was a lady right at the back who's now tweeting Liberty HQ, but she did have her hand up before. Madam, do you still want to speak, or have you moved on?
Hi, my name's Susanna. Firstly, I just want to say to Julia that it takes a lot of courage to get onto a platform and speak about your plight. And I will do everything I can here in Sheffield to raise awareness about your son's case. I'd like to congratulate Liberty on the fantastic campaign that they've put together to highlight the situation of British citizens facing extradition to the US in situations I know prima facie case is made, and where I believe the correct forum for prosecution is the UK. My question is to Bella. Why have the cases of Barbara Ahmed and Delha Ahsan not been used to highlight these principles, especially as both men have been incarcerated without trial and deprived of their liberty for over 13 years between them? I was actively involved in campaigning for Barbara Ahmed, and we managed to get 141,000 people to sign a petition for him to be put on trial in the UK. 100 lawyers signed an open letter asking for the same thing, and there have been two parliamentary debates, yet no comment or support for this. So just comment on that, please.
Okay. And we're going to get as many people in as possible before we return to the panel. So. Yes, the gentleman, just a little bit below with a laptop or something. Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Richard King. I'm a volunteer from the Open Rights Group. The law we're talking about here is that copyright. In fact, the internet is the greatest copying machine that we've ever invented. And so copyright is, in fact, the de facto law of the internet. It's supposed to be an incentive for artists to create, but these days it's more used as a stick which publishers can beat customers. Lawrence Lessig, who's a professor of law at Harvard University, gave a speech last weekend where he drew a distinction between copyright for artists and copyright for publishers. So I think we should probably try and resist installing weapons-grade copyright for publishers against the wishes of the artists, even though they don't
interesting point. Thank you for that. Very interesting point. Gentlemen, further along that row, we can just get this going as quickly as possible. Pithy contributions, then we get more in. Yes?
I'm Sam. I study here at Sheffield Hallam. I do computer security. From my understanding of what I've read online and stuff like that, Richard used a commercial domain name and with a server in Sweden or Holland, as it was mentioned, and then he swapped over to .net, which is a sort of Australian domain name. So I was just wondering what everyone thinks about how America can possibly think of a case when neither domain or server was actually had in their own specific country.
Great, thank you. Can we go this way, Joe? And I've got a gentleman in a green T-shirt and then a gentleman in a suit behind him. We'll pass it across.
My name's Daniel Hartley. I'm a final year student here at Sheffield Hallam University. First thing I want to say to Jessica is I was at that lecture you mentioned earlier where we were talking about Richard O'Dwyer, and it's very surprising that many of them know about Richard O'Dwyer's case. It's also surprising that there were a lot of students there who weren't even aware of the SOPA as well, and that was pretty surprising to me, actually, since it's been in the news a lot. I think everyone's aware about the Google Plus interview that President Obama did not long ago, and part of the speech was about Richard O'Dwyer's case. I just want to know, do you think that President Obama was turning a free essentialist geek out against the people who are actually doing this case against Richard O'Dwyer when he basically said that he can't get involved in...
Okay. I take your point. Could we have the gentleman behind you? Right.
Thank you. Phil Cook, Pirate Parts UK. The gentleman down at the bottom there mentioned earlier about putting pressure onto our members of parliament. Can I suggest that it's part of the action which Lawson and a few others mentioned this evening, that if everyone in this room is to just write to their MP and their MEPs as well, remind them that regardless of any special relationship, we are not members of the US, we're not their citizens, also that if they want to wreck people's lives, just remind them that we can wreck theirs at the next election. That would probably get quite a bit of attention and would be worth doing. Thank you.
Thank you. The gentleman with a beard. So I'm just finding these ways to describe you, this. I know there's so much more to you than whether you're Australian or whether you have a beard, but do go ahead.
One thing that MPs need to remember is that bad law creates disrespectful law.
Mm.
All over. Bad law, whether it's rushed, bad law, whether it's lengthy, like Health Act, bad law, whether it's simply wrong-headed. And that undermines their core business. So we need to think about that. My question is, we talk about the one-sided extradition. How many attempts, successful or otherwise, have been made to extradite US citizens to this country?
Thank you very much. Right, I'm just going to take one or two more now. So if you've been burning to speak, and I'm going to come to you last because the mics are up there at the minute. Is there anybody else in that neck of the woods, you know, quite high up, who wants to speak? Otherwise, I'm bringing the mics down for the last question or two. No, bring the mics down. So we've got the gentleman right at the front there.
Hi. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement (ICE) are claiming that this comes under their law because it was a .NET, and the .NET domain name was run from the registry in the U.S. That's, I don't know if anyone said that, so I just wanted to clarify that. I think in terms of the bigger picture, what's going on here, it's about the creation and the enforcement of artificial scarcity. There is no need for there to be a scarcity in easy to reproduce and copy digital files unless you want to make money out of them. And that's what it's all about. It's all about the film industry, the entertainment industry in the US wanting to make money out through enforcing copyright and creating artificial scarcity. We shouldn't be trying to create artificial scarcity in this world. We should be trying to create abundance. So it's completely fundamentally wrong. In terms of who are the terrorists here, the US is blowing up children in Pakistan and Yemen where there's no war going on, using drones being run out of the States. And they're accusing kids, students in Sheffield of being terrorists for running websites. It's just utterly unbelievable.
I think I am now going to go back to the panel for the very brief contributions before we close the meeting. I'll go to Julia last. Professor, do you want to say a final word or two? Or no?
You've said your piece.
Jessica, final reflections and any comments on what you've heard?
Yeah, I think obviously Daniel sort of covered my points earlier about the lecture where the students weren't aware. I think perhaps the message that we've all got to take away from it today is awareness and spreading the word and getting the students aware, getting the academics aware, people in the industry aware. One of my students said to me the other day, why hasn't the copyright law been rethought because it's such an old law? And perhaps that's something that we need to start debating as a society. Just awareness, spread the word, get people involved so they understand what's going on. It's the only way to protect ourselves, I think.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Bella and give Mum the last word.
Thanks very much.
There's a question that was...
Oh, sorry, David. Forgive me, David.
I'm going to try two points to make. One which is just general, out of what's been said. One is a reaction to the question aimed directly at me. The general one, which nobody's raised but everybody's touched on, is that there's a corruption in this process. And the corruption is this. In many of the countries where we have extradition arrangements, the district attorney or equivalent is an elected post. He stands for election. Therefore, he has a political stance to take as well as a judicial one. Now, think of yourself. Which is easier? to prosecute a local lad for infringement of copyright or to prosecute a foreigner? And the answer is obvious, isn't it? And the same applies to Tappin, who doesn't get a bail because he's a foreigner, and it applies to everybody who comes under the process. We've seen before, I don't know if you remember the Greek plane spotters episode, again done for political reasons rather than for justice reasons. So just remember that when this is going on, that actually this is something which is driven by a judicial process, which is not actually just. Now, in terms of the answer, whoever asked me, will the politicians be brave? Look, politicians are driven by pressures. There will be more and more cases like this. There will be more and more flagrant injustices like this. It will be more and more unreasonable, because it will be more and more obvious that it could be dealt with in Britain under British law if it's an infraction of British law. And if it's not an infraction of British law, it would be even more unreasonable. So it takes two things. It takes, one, the injustices to be made obvious. That's what Liberty does and others do. And it takes you to keep nagging. And if enough MPs are upset enough by this, or as somebody over there said, afraid enough because of this, then Mr. Cameron will have to change the law because the demand will be so great. And this is the only area. This is not by any means the only area where we have asymmetric relationships with the United States. Mm-hmm. It's getting to the point now where the United States is beginning to behave as though it creates colonial law for us.
Yep.
People will be more and more resentful of that. So you make a big enough noise and we'll get a big enough reaction.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks very much. There was a question from the gentleman at the back about the numbers. How many people have been extradited from the UK to the US and vice versa? The numbers really do speak for themselves about the imbalance in our arrangements, and many more UK citizens have been extradited to the US than we've had US citizens extradited back over here. When you think about the differing numbers in the difference in our populations, the fact that the bare figures are so different really does tell a story. But as Shami says, this isn't about a race to the bottom. It's not about a numbers game, and it's not about making sure we swap the same number of individuals. It's about remembering that these are human beings whose lives are potentially being devastated, as we heard from the other contributor today. So that's the main thing to bear in mind. Thanks to the lady at the back for raising the case of Barbara Ahmed. This goes back actually to the discussion that we had earlier on, I think. Barbara is wanted by the US on terrorism charges, and as we discussed earlier in the case of Lofty Raisi, these principles, these safeguards must be put in place for everybody, regardless of what it is that you're alleged to have done. Barbara's now exhausted the domestic route because these safeguards aren't on the statute book, and his case is now in the European Court of Human Rights. But like him, like Gary, like so many of these cases that we've heard about this evening, it's about changing the law in the UK to make sure that people aren't extradited unfairly and unjustly. There's been a number of contributions about what we can do. You know, is it really worth lobbying our politicians? Are they going to do anything? We sincerely hope that they are. Back in September 2010, we actually took the liberty of polling MPs through a polling company called ComRes and asking them what they thought about our extradition arrangements. 83% of the members of the House of Commons in September 2010 agreed or agreed strongly that the forum bar should be brought into force, and 66% agreed with reforming the law to bring back the prima facie case safeguard. So how is it that in September 2010 such vast majorities were in favour of reforming the law and it hasn't happened? It's because, quite possibly, they haven't felt the pressure yet from members of the public about the outrage that we need to show them. So I really would urge you, it's not a waste of time. Get in touch with your MP. We are up against international relations, international politics and diplomacy. So, you know, there is a really big challenge there. But don't think that you don't have a voice and that you can't make a difference.
Thank you, Jen. So, Julia, your friends and neighbours in Sheffield came out for you tonight and came out in support of your son and came out against this terrible injustice. Is there anything you'd like to say to them?
Well, again, thank you for doing that, and thank you for the questions and the comments that you've raised, and for listening to what we've been speaking to you about, and trying to, if you like, give you a little further education about extradition as it is at the moment in this country. And I will echo what Bella's said and what David said. The government is currently feeling the pressure. I can tell you that. They've stated to that fact in recent parliamentary sessions. There was a lot of pressure on the government over the Christopher Tappin extradition. In fact, they were just... certainly known to myself, they received 1,500 emails over the course of a week about Christopher Tappin into several government departments. And so you might feel that it's futile writing to your MP or emailing your MP and emailing other people in Parliament. But and you tend to get quite a canned response to those correspondences. But the numbers and the fact that people are objecting and protesting is being registered in those departments and government offices. So I would, you know, support that. Do email your MP and anybody else really who that you know in government who is interested in sorting out this extradition law. There are quite a large number of MPs who have been working tirelessly, really, and David is one of those, to try and get this extradition law reformed. And so, you know, don't just stick with your own MP. If you're going to email other people, other MPs, other members of Parliament, just put a label on your email saying it's an extradition national matter, and then you won't get the fob off about you're not a constituent, so we can't reply to you. But do email whoever you think, because they have actually got a duty to respond to these correspondences. But, you know, that's what needs to be done. Keep up the pressure. Pressure your MP, because your MP will then ask the Home Office and so on and so forth. And they will get the message that people are protesting and people are concerned and people are outraged, but we do need to show it.
Thank you, Gary. And do please think about joining Liberty if you're not already a member. We've always had lots of members up here in Sheffield. We always have warm and large audiences when we come and have events here or speak at events in Sheffield. Join if you only care about this issue, because I think we're close to a breakthrough with this campaign. I really think the moment is nearly right. You've heard what Bella said about what MPs secretly, privately think when they're polled. You've seen what the public concern is. The two just need to come together. If you join because you care about the injustice of instant extradition, we will keep you informed, we will send you material and give you things to do and give you sample letters and information that you can then raise with your MPs. You've got the paper planes that were put on your seats. You can fill them out and you can send them off. You can photograph them and put them on the internet and so on. But thanks to all of the speakers who came tonight. Thanks to Mr. Davis, who came from Halton Price because his Sheffield colleagues were too busy. Thanks to all of you. A special thanks to Julia O'Dwyer for telling Richard's story.
A couple of more things before you all go. If you are on Twitter, if you follow me at JR O'Dwyer, there you'll see all about extradition, not just Richard's case, but there will be links to people like Barbara Ahmed's campaign, the Gary McKinnon campaign, and support for Christopher Tappin's family. And one last thing, and I'm not trying to flog this book. This is a book by David Birmingham. He was one of the NatWest 3 bankers who was extradited to America. He tells his story here. This book is £2 on Amazon for the Kindle version. This is it's a great book, and I'm not just saying that because we've got things in common. I'm nearly halfway through it myself, and I can recommend it. And it'll tell you, you know, especially as a business person, what he had to endure and what he had to go through when he was extradited to America. So I would recommend it. For £2, it's
Thank
cheap
you.
As chips.
Thanks again. Good night.